In Paonia, Colorado, people look for signs on high to know if there's drought ahead. 11,000 feet high, in a book-shaped notch on Mount Lambourne.
The snow melts in June on Lambourne, and people have like old wives' tales.
For farmer Emily Hartnett, the signal for water trouble this year was pretty obvious.
Winter never really seemed to come.
A record balmy winter, followed by Colorado's driest March ever, has kept the western slope nervous about their water shutting off early this summer. Irrigation water, in open ditches like this, the Minnesota Creek Ditch, funnel down to farms and fields, land that would otherwise be high Colorado desert.
It's just sagebrush and juniper and cactus and nothing else, and we just depend so much on the water. And I'm concerned about the hay crop.
Without water, hay prices are likely to spike, and without hay, it's hard for Emily to keep her lambs and goats fed all winter. So even if her ditch has water, she's still affected by shortages everywhere. That's why Emily likes talking to the guys who keep watch on the ditches every day, the ditch riders.
My ditch rider told me that the Minnesota ditch was going to turn off July 10th, which is totally insane. And so then I called Scott, because Scott grows really great vegetables.
Scott Horner grows organic vegetables with strange names at Small Potatoes Farm.
Red Russian kale, mizuna, Tokyo bacana.
To seed his vegetables, Scott requires water in just the right spots at just the right times.
And for me, the Minnesota cutting out on July 10th is everything, because I start a lot of my crops that I harvest through the winter time around July 15th.
Typically, the ditch stays on well through August, but lately, there's no such thing as typical.
From last spring to this spring, it's been like night and day.
2011 saw record high snowpack levels in the Colorado River Basin. Spring was later, colder, and wetter.
So wet that you couldn't get things into the fields, pretty much.
But this spring was faster, hotter, and drier. So dry that the president of the ditch company, Willie Kistler, wasn't exactly optimistic about this year's prospects.
Any water that we have running in our ditch after the 1st of July will be a minor miracle.
Kessler says summer monsoon rains could still be their salvation, but he also warns of an old saying in Colorado: only fools and newcomers try to predict the weather.
And I don't know, I'm definitely not a newcomer.
But even this fifth-generation Colorado native has been amazed by the extremes lately.
I kind of have marveled how back-to-back years could be record-breaking years at total opposite ends of the spectrum.
Scott and Emily are wondering the same things too.
Does it look like water is coming for, say, mid-July?
Yeah, why didn't it snow this winter?
So the questions Emily, Scott, and Willie have asked, they all have to do with this miraculous climate system that is always good for some surprises.
Nolan Duskin is Colorado's state climatologist. He says variation, even extreme variation, is the norm, owing mostly to waves in the jet streams. Jet streams are like rivers of wind moving very fast and very high up in the atmosphere. The jet stream relieves temperature differences between the poles and the equator by creating pressure areas and storm systems with its waves.
But it does it in different ways that aren't identical from one year to the next. It averages out over time, but it's not the same any given year.
So even with these last two extreme years, if you do a straight average between them,
and you end up very close to the 30-year historic average.
Still, Nolan says there's a good reason to believe that rain patterns in the jet stream are changing as global temperatures increase over time.
Do we believe that changing polar conditions would result in changing jet stream patterns and storm tracks? The answer is yep, there would be a relationship. We just don't exactly have it nailed yet.
Jennifer Francis is one of the researchers who's trying to nail it down. At Rutgers University, she studies how melting sea ice way up in the Arctic may be causing changes in the weather at mid-latitudes, where most of the people live.
People like Emily, Willie, and Scott, and me and you.
Jennifer says the stronger the temperature differences between the mid-latitudes and the Arctic,
the faster the jet stream goes.
So as the Arctic warms up, the temperature difference gets weaker, and so does the jet stream.
So those big swings that you see on a weather map sometimes.
Those get bigger and slower. Now remember, those waves are what control our weather patterns.
If those waves are moving more slowly from west to east, then that means that the weather that you're experiencing down at the surface in Colorado and wherever is going to change more slowly.
So the upshot of a rapidly warming Arctic doesn't say what the weather will be. It just says the weather we have is going to hang around longer.
To Scott, Willie, and Emily, I can't really tell you for sure that it's going to be either wet or hot or dry or whatever this particular summer, but I can tell you that as we see this tendency for the snow to melt ever earlier in the spring, which allows the soil then to warm up earlier in the spring, that we should see an increased tendency for more hot, dry summers.
If that's the case, that leaves residents on the western slope with one last question that science can't really answer.
We're all scratching our heads wondering how much sacrifice do we make to survive.
Willie Kessler says it's best to manage expectations in years like this. Emily says she plans to buy as much hay as she can now. Scott says he'll be mulching and being selective with his crops. And the Minnesota Ditch Company is going to pipe the ditch. They hope to save water that way, even if it means drying up other areas. But that's an IC Change story for another day. IC Change is produced by Julia Kumari-Drapkin and brought to you by KVNF, Mountain Grown Community Radio, and Localore, a national public media initiative produced by AIR, the Association for Independence in Radio, with financial support by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Wincote Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Our theme music was produced by Joe Allen and Issa Caress.
I see.